All right, peace family. Once again, welcome to the Tech Building Podcast. When the devil tries to keep you down, you're always sure with the strategy. This is another topic that I have to talk about. It keeps kind of, the episode that I want to do keeps kind of getting pushed back, but I have to talk about this and I think it's very important. And the title of this episode is For the Culture, and it's going to be a word that I'm going to use a lot in this episode. And also kind of look at it in the context of this is our thing. This is our creativity. It's our ethnicity. It's our society. Everything about this is what we created and what we maintain. And so I'm going to open it up by talking about the Kendrick Lamar and Drake rap battle, however you want to categorize it, beef, whatever you want to say it is. And I felt that this was a really... It was a lot of fun elements to it, you know, it being hip hop. So it kind of has a fun element to it, has some, you know, kind of nasty negative elements to it as well. But I think it's important on a micro scale, to demonstrate some principal elements to what we consider culture. And I want to say this before I get into what I want to say. The purpose really of me of doing this podcast is really to try to help people understand a little bit of things that we deal with or interact with every day, but we might not necessarily know or understand what we are experiencing. You know, you can be like, just take, like I said, words. You may think you know what a word means, but until you actually look up the definition, you sit back and be like, man, I really didn't know what it was, or I knew what it was, you know, and it gives you more clarity in your understanding of your perception of the word. The people that know me, you know, they know that I'm a member of the registered member of the Nation of Islam under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And what is really beautiful about information and perception, I think life really is perception, because what you do, how you move, how you act, how you think is really based or shaped around your perspective. So if I had to ask somebody, you know, if I had a genie or, you know, I can make a wish, I would really wish to be able to see life the best possible way. I've used this example before where you can use an iPhone for a door stopper, but that would work, but you wouldn't be using at all. You wouldn't be using that cell phone at all to its full potential. And so it's really about your perception and how we see things. And the reason why I'm a member of the Nation of Islam really is because the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad allows for me to see life the best way. And I'm trying to, via this podcast, extend a clearer perception based on science and principle, what we're dealing with in our everyday life. So with that being said, I'm going to get my wonderful brother J. Cole out of the way first, because he was kind of like the first casualty, if you will, of this, you know, whole engagement, if you will. So what I felt was what J. Cole's mistake was, I believe that his My Delete Later album was finished. That's what I believe. And I also believe that when Kendrick did his verse on Like That, which if you really pay attention to it, it really wasn't aimed at him. You had the K with all these nines, you're gonna see Pet Sematary, the For All the Dogs reference, Prince, Outlive, Mike Jack, you know, a couple other lines in there. It's time for him to prove that he's a problem. You know, these lines in the song kind of let you know where the shot is really, truly aimed. And it wasn't really aimed at J. Cole, you know. But, you know, for whatever reason, I believe because of his relationship with Drake, you know, they're kind of on Instagram. They're in a car, I think it's a Phantom, and they're kind of hanging out, whatever, J. Cole and Drake. And I feel that that relationship put a battery in J. Cole's bag. And if you listen to the My Delete Later album, Now, everybody know, that knows J. Cole knows that he talks, you know, he's very confident. He's very, you know, kind of braggadocious when it comes to his skill set and his position in the hip hop, you know, hierarchy, if you will, especially if we're talking about in today's generation. And he's never been really shy about that. But I felt that on this album, when you're hearing him talk, he's kind of really laying it on thick. He's kind of really putting it out there how he really thinks about how, what the way that he thinks about himself, you know? So I took note of that as I'm listening to it. And I think I listened to, yeah, because it was Ramadan. And I remember I got up one morning and the 7 minute drill song was out and I'm listening to it. And I'm like, okay. Then I went back and listened to the album. And so it's getting me into the mindset of J. Cole. The minister says in his lecture, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan says in his lecture, the mind of God, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, you know, you got to get into the mind of somebody to try to understand their motivation, why they're doing the thing that they're doing, why they're writing the things that they're writing. And so as I heard J. Cole's lyrics, I forget the song at this point because I haven't heard it in so long, but you can hear in the content that J. Cole has at least thought about the engagement that he's getting ready or that he's entering into, you know? And so I remember listening to it and I'm like, okay, J. Cole is ready for, you know, the action. He wants smoke. So I'm like, okay, good. Listening to the Like That record, I was like, all right, Kendrick is not playing. Like, that's what I really, that was my first initial reaction to the diss record where I was like, all right, Kendrick's not playing. You know, talking about I crash out, this Melly Mel if I have to. You know, he's talking about, I mean, like I said, all the kid with all these nines, you're going to see Pet Sematary. You know, the line, like I said before, that was just super crazy was Prince outlived Mike Jack. That's when I knew Kendrick was not playing. That's when I really sat back and I was like, all right, this thing is, you know, it's what it is. You know what I'm saying? So I liked what Kendrick said. I also liked what J. Cole said, but what I liked that I liked J. Cole's song better, but I thought Kendrick was really like, all right, I'm not playing around. So getting to the what most are considering an apology, we can just kind of categorize it as a, like, he rescinded the diss. So from a competitive perspective, it's just whack. Because this is hip hop. This is what we do. This is something I'm going to be talking about in this episode. I'm not going to tarry on that right so long right now on that. But what J. Cole's mistake was, in my opinion, it was not rescinding the diss. That's not what his mistake was. How he handled it, I would probably say wasn't the best. But what I felt that his mistake was allowing the battery to be put in his back and to be pressured into, if you will, doing something that he really, according to what he said, like, he really didn't want to do. That's something that I felt like was just not intelligent. You understand what I'm saying? That was the mistake to me. You had an album already done, great piece of work. Then you added the 7 minute drill. You didn't want to do it, but you let, like, in my opinion, Drake, and according to what he said, you know, his friends and whatnot, telling like, yo, what you going to do? X, Y, Z, X, Y, and Z, to do something that you really didn't want to do. And you played yourself out of position in that way. That was the mistake, opening the door for people to look at you negatively or to change how they perceive you and things like that. That was the mistake that he made, in my opinion. Now, I want to get to this. To my wonderful Muslim family, I gotta say this. We have to be very careful how we look at and how we analyze these situations that go on in the world. Now, I want to say it like this. When Chris Rock, when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, we had all kinds of Muslims, registered Muslims in the Nation of Islam, saying, you know, this is how you defend the black woman, and this is how I would handle, you know, my wife, or, you know, somebody disrespecting my wife, this is how I would handle a brother, X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z. And using the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad to justify that type of behavior. Not using the minister directly, but using the teachings under the leadership of the minister to justify that kind of behavior. And then we fast forward to the situation with Brother J. Cole. Again, we're using the minister. You know, we showed J. Cole's picture with the minister and talk about how they're brothers and X, Y, and Z, which is all true and all valid. This is where the line of using the minister, to me, we have to be careful. Because, so J. Cole, let's say he wakes up Monday morning. I know the song probably didn't come out on a Monday, but he wakes up Monday morning. He's getting all kind of text messages that, you know, Kendrick dissed you, X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z. So he probably runs out, listen to the song, whatnot. Then he's like, oh, man, okay. Then, like you said, his peoples are hitting him up. Yo, you got to, you know, respond. What you're going to do, X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z. Okay, now I'm driving to the studio. So in our teaching in the Nation of Islam, we're taught to settle on the best part. I'm not going to publicly disrespect or attack a brother or sister. We've seen this example by the minister, 100,000 times. So he's going to the studio. Man, I got to write, I'm going to do this track, whatever. The teaching of the minister that he got is in his head already. Driving to the studio. Now, I'm writing down the lyrics. This is still your brother, J. Cole. The minister still has told you X, Y, and Z based on, you know, the teachings. I'm not going to go against your brother in public, but I'm writing the lyrics. We're putting the minister to the side is the point I'm trying to say. So writing the lyrics down, okay. Then I'm going into the booth. I'm recording the song. Ignoring, you know, I'm not trying to say ignoring intentionally, but putting what I know better to the side. So now you've recorded the song. Now you're playing the song back. You're listening to it. Okay. Still your brother, J. Cole. So my point is, from the time he heard about the song to the pressing upload on the song, the minister's voice, I'm sure, was in your head every step of the way. And you decided to, as the minister put it, kill the messenger of God that's inside of all of us. But you decided to put what you knew better, both in a physical sense of the word of what you heard and in a spiritual sense of how you really felt about it. He said himself, he didn't really even want to do it. So we put that to the side. So I'm saying this to Muslims. So when we then take the brother's behavior and then we put it next to the minister saying that, you know, he's looking at the situation through the minister's eyes, we tried to use the minister and the teaching to justify Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. The minister would not approve of that. Anybody in the nation, if you were to do something like that, a brother makes a joke about your wife or whomever, and a brother was to go and slap that brother in the mosque, he'd be put out the nation. That's our way. So for us to go in there and justify on the internet and justify our brother slapping Chris Rock, our brother, that's not our way. And then when we have this situation of J. Cole and going against Kendrick Lamar, again, we're using the minister's words. We're using the minister's perspective that we don't really even understand fully to justify what we're seeing. The minister doesn't even want us to be posting his lecture clips on the internet because we're taking it out of context. So when we're using his perspective in these micro situations, it makes us look a little crazy. We got to take a step back. And it makes us look a little bit contradictory. So we have to be careful as Muslims with how we go about demonstrating, displaying our way of life on the internet. I had to get that out the way real quick. So that was J. Cole's mistake, in my opinion. So now we're moving on to Kendrick and Drake back and forth. So what was the first song? I think the first official track was Like That. And then Right. Then Drake comes out with the song Push Ups, you know, which I thought, to me, the original beat with the Get Money sample in the back, to me, that was the better sounding beat. I thought the song sounded better on that particular beat. Then when I heard the official, you know, version on YouTube, I thought it sounded a bit worse. You know, I didn't think that it sounded, you know, as good. You know what I mean? But I like some of the things that Drake said. You know, you're big stepping with a size 7 men's on, you know, things like that. What else did he say in the song? Like the short joke thing, I felt really hit for Drake to me. You know what I mean? Talking about Rick Ross, I thought that was funny. And throughout this whole battle, I thought Drake did a great job of, I mean, with the jokes. I think Drake is probably a funny person, you know, in real life. The angle of trying to kind of, I guess, sun Kendrick to a degree, I thought that was a good angle. What's a prince to a king? He a son. On a surface level, that line I thought was a hitter. The Metro line was probably one of Drake's biggest quotables from the battle. My favorite line from the joint was something where he talked about, just to talk to you, I had to hike down him at the top of the mountain or something like that. Yeah, he said, I'm at the top of the mountain, so you tight now. Just to have to talk with you, I had to hike down. I thought that was my personal favorite line from Drake in that song. Now, this is where I had to get off the train with Drake on this. The way you're doing splits, your pants might rip, bro. That line's not good. That line actually sucks. You know, the line is really a bad line. You know what I mean? And I'm probably going to talk about it now because I'm kind of going to go through each song a little bit. But okay, I'll get to this part. There was the battle did devolve to a degree into a lot of mudslinging, which I felt is a fact. You know, Meet the Grams probably being the poster boy for that. But it did devolve into a lot of mudslinging. And so with that, there was a lot of things. You know, Drake said son was a woman beater. You know, baby, his son or, you know, one of his children might not be his, X, Y, and Z. And Kendrick, you know, with the whole pedophile accusations, messing around with young women, having, you know, estranged children and whatnot. And the discourse online was that people were kind of getting mad that Kendrick could kind of get away with lies and Drake really couldn't. This is a very super, super, super important part of what we're really talking about here in this situation. Rap is, to me, as I said before, the most life-expressive genre of music, in my opinion. You know? So when we're listening to our artists, we're paying attention to their story, their behavior, their character. That's what we're kind of in line with. That's why I'm rocking with you to a degree. You know what I mean? Aside from the fact that the music that you make it sound good and all that kind of stuff like that. I'm rocking with you because of you, the person. So when Drake comes out and says, you know, you're a woman beater, you know, your child might not be yours. Okay, hold on, let me take one step back. We don't care, as Joe Budden says, we don't care about lies in a battle, because as I mentioned in the previous podcast episode, we don't know the people. So it's all acting. I don't know if Kendrick really beat on his girl or not. I don't know if Drake got an estranged child or not. But what makes one more believable than the other is the character, the perceived character of the person. That's what allows for the diss or for the lie to track, as Melissa Ford said on Joe Budden's show. If the lie doesn't track, as I said to my friends, I was like, if somebody said, you know, Tone killed a stripper. You say it to one of my friends or my family, they'd be like, you know, get out of here. And Tone ain't do nothing like that. But if a person said, now if I'm in a battle, you know, if somebody's dissing me, somebody would say Tone yelled at a stripper, then that's a more believable lie than me killing a stripper. You know what I mean? So Drake, the thing that Drake really misunderstood and mishandled in the battle part was your character lined up too much with what Kendrick was saying. It just lined up too much with it. There's, you know, videos on TikTok, all these kind of things like that, where it just makes you look crazy when it comes to these accusations. Kendrick doesn't have anything like that in his, you know, atmosphere, for lack of a better term. He doesn't have things like this in his atmosphere to where these things could attach itself to Kendrick. So it's really about the perception of the person's character, what we're dealing with, that allows for certain things to track, to attach itself to a person. But at the end of the day, nobody cares about lies. There was a big popular battle between two of my favorite battlers, Murder Mook and Tay Rock. And in Murder Mook's third round, he was getting into, you know, these kind of, you know, Tay Rock dealing with transgenders and talking about he had an audio file and all that kind of stuff like that. To me, in a battle, like in that, in a formal battle like that, I don't really even really count those bars because, bro, you could just be completely making them up. You know what I mean? Then he's like, oh, I'm going to put out the audio and all that kind of stuff like that. It's like, bro, he never did, you know? But this is the problem with mudslinging is like, we don't know if it's true or not. Same thing in battle rap. Talking about Rum Nitty used to work at Walmart. T-Rex is a nurse. Tay Rock with the transgender joint. But I remember back, Kayshawn was saying to Sue Surf, he was dealing with a, you know, 16-year-old, something crazy like that. You feel what I'm saying? We don't really care if it's true or not. It's really about how you're presenting it in the battle and is it effective? That's really just the whole point about the whole thing. I think people was getting so bent out of shape because when, see, but hold on, let me say this too though. The jokes that Drake had, like on Family Matters, do when you beat your girl, is it domestic violence because she's bigger than you? The short jokes and whatnot, when you're using that, the domestic violence accusations in a comedic way like that, those hit. But when you're trying to make it, as you said in the Hard Part 6, you know, all of my stuff is facts, it's like, bro, come on. It's just not believable. And unfortunately for Drake, fortunately for Kendrick Lamar, his character, and see, this is not, as they say, glazing. I don't even like that language. Pause. I don't even like that language. But the trying to be like a fanboy or a stan, it's not being a fanboy for Kendrick. This is what's on his jacket. This is what his character perception is. Unfortunately for Drake, this is what your character perception is. So it's not that people are just, like I said, being Omega fanboys for Kendrick and trying to hate on Drake. It's about the character and the perception of the person that plays a role into what lies can fly and what lies kind of get shut down, right? You'd be like, okay, bro, that, like when Kendrick said, my first one, like my last one, it's a classic, you don't have one. That's enough of a lie or a question mark for it to be passable to me. I remember on the Joe Budden podcast, it was kind of saying like, you know, Drake has classic, whatever. Okay, praise be to Allah. I'm not hating on that. To me, that lie was passable enough in a battle when Jadakiss told 50 Cent, you got the weakest flow out of everybody on your crew. Now, that's just outright true. You understand what I'm saying? But then when Nas was talking about compared to Beans You Whack on Ether, that's a good enough lie to pass. You got to be strategic with how you lie, how you try to make somebody be perceived in a battle. I know I'm belaboring this, but I really want to make this clear because this is a whole big thing. Like, oh, people just, they letting Kendrick say whatever and getting mad at Drake because he can't say whatever. Bro, it's really not whatever. It's kind of like an art to doing the thing. You got to know how to make your opponent look in a certain kind of way. You understand what I'm saying? And Drake overestimated his pull in the court of public opinion. Okay, let me move on. So, now, we after Push Ups comes out, then comes the Taylor Made, you know, freestyle, which I thought was whack. I thought this song was really completely whack, you know what I mean? And I felt that the AI was trash. Like, I thought that whole angle, I guess I will give it credit to a degree for innovation. Probably the first battle or first, you know, diss track to use AI. But it was cool. But the lyrics of the song was just complete, especially in hindsight, you know, especially in hindsight, it did not hit at all, you know. So I'm not even going to go over any lyrics in that joint. I thought it was trash. I didn't think anything about it was good. But what I liked about it when Drake said, as soon as you decide to drop, I'm going on the loose. And he was like, going on the loose. I'm like, okay, Drake. Like, Drake was looking for smoke. And I'm like, the whole, you following through. Like, I thought that was fire as far as posturing is concerned. Like, he's looking for smoke. You dig what I'm saying? I can appreciate that and I can rock with that. You know what I mean? From a battle perspective. So, yeah, he says, as soon as you get the courage to drop, I'm out on the loose. You feel me? I'm like, okay. So then we have Kendrick dropping Euphoria. And I don't want to make the episode too long, but Euphoria is such a great and amazing song. I really felt like Euphoria, to me, that could have been it. Kendrick could have just dropped Euphoria. Now, in the court of public opinion, where people were very narrative-minded, people would have talked about how, you know, Drake dropped Family Matters after Euphoria, so he won and whatnot. But as time would have gone on, we would have seen that this song, Euphoria, was really enough. And I remember I was at work, you know, because I was checking Twitter, you know, every day for, you know, a release. I actually thought Kendrick wasn't going to respond to it, you know, but, you know, it was them superpowers getting neutralized. I could only watch in silence. I got to digress on this for a second. There is a fine art to expressing thought in a creative manner that fits in reality. When you take the imagination, the abstract that's in the mind, and you're able to put it into reality, again, in a creative, relevant way, that's the mastery of lyricism. And anybody that is a rapper or that, you know, fact check me, you know, why I think Loaded Lux is who he is in the battle world, and why Murder Mook is who he is in the battle world. T-Rex, Tay-Rock, Goods, you're talking about like the old school guys, Head Ice, people like that, where they're able to put their personality into lyrics with creativity, with relevant reality. The mixture of all of these components into a rhyming speech pattern, you know, if you will, really demonstrates the mastery of the craft. And so it's not just, I will talk about this right now. People try to get on Kendrick for like making random noises. I remember on the Like That joint, you know, he's saying like making the aw sound. And a person could hear that and write that off as just some arbitrary, random, strange, you know, obscure sound that he's just putting into a song to try to be creative. First of all, the way Kendrick is rapping is just very, it's like crazy. It's very like his tone of voice, his enunciation is super crazy. I don't think people really pay attention to even just that part, where how he just even pronounces words. Kendrick, I think, is kind of known for like really strongly enunciating like the T syllable, not just the push a T, like, you know, that's funny, but I'm trying to think of a lyric where he like on the verse, the nostalgia verse, and he was saying, he's mentioned 10 a couple times, and 9 times out of 10, and he rhymed like when there's tension in the air, 9s come with extensions. The way that he's enunciating the T in there, it's like, bro, it makes it crazy. Like, it makes where it's like a creative explosion when you're thinking about the confines of a rap verse. how he's able to kind of pack all of this creativity into a sentence or a bar or whatever the case may be, or in a verse, is really like mind blowing. So when you go into like the all sound that Kendrick is making, again, you can write it off. This is what I'm talking about with perception. I'm not going to go super into this. It's going to take me off my topic. But when we get into the perception of understanding what we're hearing, you understand what I'm saying? You have to be aware of what's going on in order to even be able to perceive it. When I'm listening to somebody, I'm like thinking about what they're thinking about as they're writing the rhymes. You understand what I'm saying? So when I'm hearing Kendrick Lamar on that verse, hold on one moment. He says, I hope them sentiments symbolic. My temperament bipolar, I choose violence. Like, I cannot even go into, each song could be like its own, like in the lab. But it's like he's taking the emotional, they're taking the thought train and the emotional attachment to what he's feeling. It's almost like a TV show. It's like a commercial. It's like a cartoon. But he's like serious. And he's expressing it, and he's talking in a crazy type of way. If you're talking about Kendrick on like a song like Rigor Mortis, or you know, Ronald Reagan era, or you know, ADHD, to this, you almost sound like two different people. To me, that's just crazy. You understand what I'm saying? I'm sorry, I'm yelling, but I'm sorry. I get turned up over really strong creativity. I'm gonna leave like that alone. But the sound that he's making on that song really demonstrates the depth of creativity that Kendrick really has when we're talking about speech and enunciation. I think Kendrick is king onomatopoeia. The way Kendrick puts sounds in his verses makes it crazy. So when he's saying them superpowers getting neutralized, I can only watch in silence. I'm not going to break down the whole song. But when you look at Drake, it's like he's like, people are looking at him like Thanos. You know, especially when he said the line from Push-Ups, what is this, a 20v1? You know what I'm saying? So he kind of has this aura like, yo, he's like more a larger than life, like a super, super human being. So when he says them superpowers getting neutralized, you're looking at it like, yes, the vibe is starting to feel different. The famous actor we once knew was now looking paranoid, now spiraling. You're moving just like a degenerate. Every antic is feeling distasteful. The AI joint was like, all right, bro, you feel me? Especially, I'm pretty sure people that love the West Coast, love Tupac, love Snoop Dogg, like, bro, like, that was probably corny to them. To me, it was corny, you know? I was gonna mention my huge reach, but I don't want it to make it seem like I'm being a Kendrick stan. So when he gets into the second part of the song, again, I'm not gonna break down the whole song, man. Maybe I will go back and break down the whole song in a shorter episode, but I'm not gonna do that right here. He does the whole shoe thing, and he's saying, people are saying he did six B's, like B, 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 did it six times to kind of signify that he was shooting the hour, whatever. The beat selection on Euphoria was so crazy to me, because it's so, again, it was like not of the norm. Now, maybe for Kendrick in his current iteration was the norm, but it was really, I'm like listening to these beats and I'm like, that's crazy. Like, bro, I don't even understand how you, like, these people be making this joint. You understand what I'm saying? But, you know, yeah, I'm out the way. I'm low. Okay, this element here is remote. Okay, I ain't thinking about no reaper. I'm reaping what I sow. Again, this, the way this brother is using language, you have to, when I'm listening to bars, I'm really visualizing and I'm thinking about, again, why he's writing what he's writing. So the image that you're giving me, you say, you know, this island right here is remote. Okay, I ain't thinking about no reaper. I'm reaping what I sow. You're putting me in a visualized, almost deeply introspective, almost emotional or sentimental thought process. You understand what I'm saying, bruh? This really is, you know, it goes that deep. You know, it really is that serious when we're talking about the creativity. So then he's saying, you know, I'm gonna skip ahead. Then of course he has the Parkinson line. You know what I mean? Everybody, that's one of Kendrick's quotables. I will digress on that for a quick moment. The quotables from Kendrick in this battle, period. The quotables were OP. Like the straight up quotables were super OP. The brother was just, he had quotable after quotable in this battle. And it's sort of like, when you hear the Parkinson line, it's just super crazy. You understand what I'm saying? The first time I shot me a Drake, the homie had told me to aim it this way. I didn't point down enough. Today I show you I learned from those mistakes. That is just crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like the way that he's putting it together again and his tangible reality. You, if Drake gets, Drake, the artist gets up on there and says, you know, the first time I shot me a Drake, if he said those lines, it's not going to hit the same because his perception as a character does not translate the same as Kendrick. You know, man, somebody had told me that you got a ring on God, I'm ready to double the wage. I'd rather do that than let a Canadian N-word make Pac turn in his grave. Then, of course, you know, cut the business. He said, what'd he say? Oh, okay, you got it twisted. What is it, the braids? That was probably the biggest meme of the entire battle. You know, I hurt your feelings. You don't work with me no more. The way he's rapping these lines is like, again, it's very like speech heavy, enunciation heavy, where he's like, I'm on a beat, I'm rapping in a rhythmic way, I'm doing the thing in a melodic way, so to speak, or I'm in synchronization with the beat, but it's like I'm almost able to fit myself in that structure. As I mentioned in the Anatomy of Greatness episode, when you are able to operate within limits, but still demonstrate your greatness or demonstrate your talent in a given field, that's what really you were able to absorb the greatness from the person. Like I said, when a person is doing a high dive in the Olympics or a person is doing a gymnastics routine, you can only stay in the air for so long. You can only do so much in the air, you know, while you're falling from the diving board or while you're doing a tumble routine or something like that. So when you're watching the person and they're able to execute all these moves and stick the landing and do all those kind of things like that, that makes you sit back and be like, man, wow, this person really is a master of their craft. But the way that Kendrick is able to talk like this, be funny, be creative on a very, you know, uncommon style of sound of beat, it's just overwhelmingly creative. You know, I love him to death. He said in 8 bars, I'll explain that phrase. Now, I don't really know how to count bars. I feel like I know a little bit more now because people have done it on TikTok, on the internet, due to this particular, you know, portion of the song. But Kendrick almost allows for you to count. He almost allows for you to count the bars when he switches up and he's like, I love him to death in 8 bars, I'll explain that phrase, huh? Ain't no, it's nothing nobody can tell me, huh? The way that he's putting that part, you're almost even able to count it based on that. People are gonna look at me crazy for this, you know, reaction because I'm so enveloped in this style of creativity. But then he says, you know, I got language barriers. It's no accent you can sell me. Drake is known for having, yo, like I said, he from London, he from Africa, he from, you know, Houston, he from Atlanta, he from wherever he's rapping at, that's where he's from. And that's just not hip hop, period. You understand what I'm saying? But you know, I got language barriers. It's no accent you could sell me. Like, bro, that is just super, super crazy. Then of course, again, another quotable, you know, I pray they my real friends, if not YNW Melly. After exactly 8 bars, he delivers that line. So he's giving you technique as a chef. I'm gonna have to do this in two parts. I already know that right now. He's like, I'm not gonna put out like a 2-hour episode. But as a chef, you have technique, and I kind of categorize it as like thoughtfulness, you know. And when you go to culinary school, I've experienced this, I've seen it from other chefs, I've seen it on shows like Top Chef, where you get so enamored with technique and wanting to show people, you know, this high level technique, things of that nature. And you can lose the thoughtfulness or the spirit related to why you're creating the food. So you're trying to make, you know, this this spherified dressing, and you know, using this dry ice, and you're using all the like sous vide and this kind of machinery, this kind of technique, this cutting saw, and all that, and it kind of gets lost, and it doesn't seem like it's like too many things going on, and you don't have a clear idea of what's going on, and you're really just trying to demonstrate too much technique. And then on the flip side of it, like we say, like this, like grandma's cooking, it's like, it might not be technique heavy, but the flavor is really good. The texture is really good. The consistency is really good. You can feel the love in the food. You know what I mean? So as chefs, the best chefs, we're able to demonstrate both in a great way, you know, in a great balanced way, in a supreme balanced way. Some of the best chefs in the world will give you the grandmom cooking feeling, but in a refined, very technical, supremely refined style of presentation. And that's what separates a good chef from a great chef, or a you know, double S tier, God tier chef from a great chef. The balance between technique and the, let's just call it the spiritual side, or more of the reality side of what people like to eat. And so when Kendrick is going in this part of the song, he's giving you great technique, and then he ends it with what they call in battle rap, a haymaker. You know what I mean? So then, of course, the infamous line again, people reading the lyrics, or you're looking at what this brother is saying. This song was enough to get Drake out of here. And that would have demonstrated, or that would have came to pass over the, you know, through the test of time. Like I said, Kendrick dropped this, then Drake would have dropped later on, you know, Family Matters. Everybody would have been saying Drake won. But as time would have progressed, and you going and you breaking down this song line for line, you would really be like, Kendrick really washed Drake with just this song. And so he said, I don't like you popping stuff at Pharrell. For him, I inherit the beef. Again, the way that he's saying it, I'm not going to imitate it because people are going to make it, like, be like, make fun of me or whatever. But the way he's saying, I inherit the beef, it's not just like, it's like I said, it's almost like he's being comedic with it, or he's being cinematic with it. The language that I would use to describe Kendrick in this battle is, he was very theatrical. You know, he's being very theatrical throughout the entire rap battle, with his themes, with beat selection, with his content, and with the enunciation of, you know, his words. So he says, you know, forget all that pushing T, pushing P. Let me see you push a T. Again, that's just a instant, you know, TikTok meme, quotable, whatever the case may be. I'm not going to go too crazy on that. You better off spinning again on him. You think about pushing me. He's Terrence Stewart. I'm Terrence Crawford. Yeah, I'm whooping feet. I never knew Pusha T's name. And then, of course, I had to Google, because I'm not from the West Coast, what whooping feet was or is. It's like when you're beating somebody so bad, they you beat them out their shoes. As Joe Budden would say, that's more cultural currency that we're dealing with here when he's saying stuff like that. But again, he's putting himself and demonstrating supreme technique and cultural balance, reality balance. He's Terrence Thorne. I'm Terrence Crawford. Yeah, I'm whooping feet. I almost be like, look at it, but like, bro, why did you even think of talking like that? And the way that he says, yeah, I'm whooping feet, like the way that he said feet in that line, I'd be looking at the bro like, bro, something wrong with you to talk like that and act like that. I think about this too, like with the Migos. Again, people look at it and be like, oh, the Migos is this and that, whatever. I'm not going to go to that. I'm definitely going to do a Migos episode, because I feel like I just owe it to them to do that. But sometimes when I hear Takeoff, I'm like, may Allah be pleased with our brother. I'm like, bro, why did you just scream like that on this particular part? Why did you decide to put this type of sequence of words together and rap it in this particular type of way? It's really deep when you're trying to get into the mind of the person. So yeah, he said, we ain't got to get personal, it's a friendly face, you keep it that way. This is where now we're getting into the strategy of Kendrick Lamar in this battle. And in hindsight, this was Kendrick, his, all right, I'm just going to out-rap you. I'm going to technically show you that I'm just a way better rapper than you. But I'm warning you, we ain't got to get personal. This is a friendly face. You should keep it that way. He said, I know stuff about people that make Gunna want to look like a saint. Bro, let's keep it on this type of energy level, you know? This ain't about critic. This is, again, this is a, like a very subtle part, but it's very poignant. This ain't been about critics, not about gimmicks, not about who the greatest. It's always been about love and hate. Now, let me say I'm the biggest hater. Now, that part is like he being funny. But this ain't a, this ain't been about critics. It's not about gimmicks. It's not about who the greatest. I'm just going to, I'm better than you. This is, I'm stripping everything else away from this battle. And this is a me and you. And I'm going to be better than you. I could go further than that, but I'm not. Then again, this was very, this was just super funny. This was just super funny to me. He said, now let me say I'm the biggest hater. I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk. I hate the way that you dress. There's people on the internet that saying, he said, I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk, based on Drake's feature on Walk It, Talk It by the Migos on the Culture 2 album, which just make, it makes Kendrick crazy. And I will digress on that for a quick moment. This element, this Ish was mad about this on Joe Budden's podcast, where he's like, essentially, people are attributing all of these different random potential meanings to lyrics to Kendrick, and he doesn't even like, Ish is kind of saying like, bro, like, probably not even thinking about all these things like that, but people are attributing his, these lines and these meanings to his genius. This is what I will say about that. Again, this goes to character perception. We believe that Kendrick is creative enough to think of all of these gazillion references to something. Drake, we don't think that about you. Not to say that you can't do that, but that's not the perception that we as fans have of you. But with Kendrick, again, this is to me what makes him the boogeyman. If you're trying to attack Kendrick and you're looking at Kendrick, okay, how do I break him down? How do I defeat Kendrick Lamar as an artist? You look at a song like 616 in LA, and you're looking at all the different interpretations that people are giving for what, you know, 616 means or potentially could mean. You'd be like, man, is this brother really thinking of all these things? Or, well, what else is he capable of? You really wouldn't be able to put your finger on what he's capable of because it's like an ocean of things that you feel like he could pull out of a bag. This is why I felt like strategically, Kendrick does a 3-beat diss track, with a lot of Easter eggs in it. So I felt that Drake's way of doing it was, I'm going to do a music video with a lot of other Easter eggs in that, which I thought was cool, but it did not, I felt like you're following his pace. So in a rap battle, I felt like you're kind of trying to chase behind what people thought is attractive from Kendrick, or people think is attractive from Kendrick. You're trying to do that in your own way. Bro, you gotta be you. But the problem is, Drake, again, if I was Drake's man's in him, this is always something like, bro, you gotta be you. Funny enough about this whole thing, I look at Drake as if this was me rapping about the things that Drake be rapping about. All this, you know, drop a 50 bag for the mob in the spot. My sister would text me or call me and be like, bro, what are you talking about? What mob? You never grew up like that. My bro Drake, who's a big Drake fan, he say the same thing like, yo, Tone, this is a banger, but bro, what are you talking about? What mob are you talking about? You didn't grow up like that. You don't talk like that. What are we doing? Are you okay with portraying something that you don't live? You understand what I'm saying? So this time I'm looking at Drake like, bro, you got to be you, but we don't know who you are. That's the problem. So Kendrick says, I hate the way that you diss. If I catch flight, it's going to be direct. You know, we hate the women you get with because they confuse themselves with real women. I notice I said, we, it's not just me. I'm with the culture feeling. This atmosphere that Kendrick is starting to, you know, draw around Drake, which really is what kind of like drowned him out or kind of pushed him out, where people are beginning to look at you differently. So when he says, I'm with the culture feeling, again, Kendrick is at a level enough to make a statement like that. And even if people are like, nah, it's not like that, you know, it's believable enough. it makes sense enough because it's Kendrick Lamar to where it now becomes a very substantial line. I remember Sue Surf says in the battle, I walked around Carolina so much I got Tar Heels. That line makes no sense. What is a Tar Heel? Now we know the collar, that's the mascot, North Carolina Tar Heels, whatever, you know what I mean? But are you getting like tar on your heels from walking around? Like, what are we really trying to do here? But because it's Sue Surf and people love Sue Surf personality, they love his persona, his image, that was like a haymaker. He says another line where he says, earn in ash, that's Nash. People, they going crazy because we're not paying attention enough to really the depth of what the person is talking about. We're more in love with the persona or the personality or the character that the person is trying to present. This is a part of strategy when you're trying to do what you got to do in this hip hop thing. When you're trying to really break somebody down, but it takes somebody like for Surf, it was Loaded Lux. It takes like a Loaded Lux to now it's, you're equalizing the persona battle in the, you know, he had beef with Joe Budden. He had beef with Meek Mill. He had beef with Pusha T. Drake was able to out persona or out character them because he's just a much brighter star than them. But when it came to Kendrick Lamar, Kendrick was able to even up the perception battle. And then he used his supreme ability to really, you know, leave Drake in the dust. But Drake, in his experience, I felt that he sent back like, okay, I'm going to be able to do the same thing to Kendrick Lamar because I'm Drake and I'm at the top of this thing, you know, in this position. Moving on. How many more fairy tales about your life till we had enough? How many more black features do you finally feel that you're black enough? Okay. This is the colorism aspect of the battle that I want to touch on really quick. And I think I did before, but I want to make sure that I just drive it home really quick. It's not that, to me, it's not a light skin versus dark skin situation. It's not a colorism type of situation. It is an authenticity type of situation. Drake, you're not giving us, you're not giving to the fans your personality. Like I said, you go on to Houston, you're saying, you know, I'm talking about link up with my tapping with my dog, this, this, and that. It's like, bro, you go to, you did a song with Hetty One, you're talking about, you know, you're talking like you're from London, like you're a road man. You dig what I'm saying? And it's like, bro, you don't talk like that. I want to hear how you talk. You're going to Atlanta, rapping with the Migos. Shout out my dudes that chop out the bando. You don't talk like that. We don't know who you are. We don't know what you represent. So it's not that line, how many more black features do you finally feel that you're black enough? It's like you're trying to, again, satisfy, potentially a void in you about not feeling secure about who you are. And you've demonstrated over your career that you don't know who you are. You're not comfortable with who you are. So everywhere you go, you're changing it up. It don't make no sense. I like Drake with the melodies. I don't like Drake when he acts up. The way Kendrick is saying that line, it's like he's almost like frustrated, like, yo, I like Drake with the melodies. I don't like Drake when he acts up. You feel me? Then you're like, you know, you're gonna make somebody bring back part. Let me see the Chelsea really crash something. That's hard. You feel me? Like, then I'm gonna move on. Yeah, my first one, like my last one. It's a classic you don't have when we talk about that line already. Let your core audience stomach that, then tell them where you get your abs from. That's hilarious. You know what I'm saying? That's a surface level bar. Let your core audience stomach that. Dealing with, you know, anatomical reference. Then tell them where you get your abs from. That's funny. V12 is a fast one. People on the internet, they are showing that a V12, whatever that V12 thing is, it's like a machine that they use. That's how they do the artificial abs. And again, you'd be like, yo, Kendrick, did you really Google that? Like, you feel me? Like, and you like, yo, he probably did. This dude is insane. V12 is a fast one. Then the way he does the bow, 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 like, it's not like Kendrick is like, just like, no, he's like, bow, 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 you know? He's like, bow, bow, bow. Like, you can hear the inflection you can hear the plosive going into the microphone. He's like not playing. I'm pretty sure people have watched, maybe not a lot of people watched it, but I'm pretty sure Dre has seen this, where it's like, when Lil Wayne's in the booth, he's like spazzing. You know, he's like going crazy. You feel what I'm saying? They did the little behind the scenes of Lil Wayne recording his Show Me What You Got. He like in the microphone and he's like going crazy. You feel what I'm saying? So you kind of get a mental image of what it's like when somebody's recording the music. But when Kendrick, he's like, bow, bow, bow. You can hear that he's like, yo, he's not playing. Then he says, headshots for the year. You better walk around like Daft Punk. That line is just super insane and stupid. It's just crazy. This brother is really crazy. Something is severely wrong with this man. Then you have the temperature change of the song. And what I like when he says, remember a top dog who they think they playing with. Drake is name dropping the brother. I don't know his real name. I don't really even know who he is, all like that. But I know TDE Top Dog Entertainment. So I would imagine he is the namesake behind that record label or that group. And Drake is name dropping this brother. And he's saying, you know, Top is telling you, you know, dropping Give Me 50, whatnot. And he's trying to make it seem like Top Dog and Kendrick are separate. And Top Dog is using Kendrick, you know, as in this little boy type way. You feel what I'm saying? But when Kendrick says, remember, a Top Dog, who the F they think they playing with? He's squashing that. It's almost like Top Dog is in the booth and he like, bro, he thought he had one with that. He thought he made me look in a certain kind of way with that. Then he's looking at his mans and he's like, yo, who they really think that they playing with? And his mans probably looking at him like, yo, I don't know. He got the whole situation looking crazy. But you hear Kendrick, you hear Kendrick's tone change. I'm going to go back real quick. He does the joint V12. It's a fast one. The first part of the line was like, my first one, like my last one. It's a classic. You don't have one. Bro, why are you doing that? What is making you say and do things like that? So when people come up to me, like a brother in my job came up to me the other day and was like, you know, Euphoria was like a jab or whatever. I'm like, bro, you people don't understand what you're hearing. You don't even understand what you're hearing. You listen to a brother, he's rapping. He said, you're going to make a dude bring back Puck. Let me see if Chels really crash some. Then he just changes it. Yeah, my first one, like my last one. It's a classic. You don't have one. Why are you rapping like that? That's just really insane. I'm gonna go to this. I'm gonna finish this song, and I gotta close it out because I don't want to just be too long of an episode. It's gonna be probably two parts. Maybe I might have to do three parts on this. But that level of creativity and expression is your palette has to be refined enough to appreciate these kind of things. We have our wonderful brother, Keith Lee, who is a food critic, if you will. And, you know, he goes different places and he tries different food, whatever the case may be. This is the point of what I'm saying. I feel like brother Keith Lee, popularity has gone to this like type of level because he represents the typical, the average American or Black American's palate. It's no problem with me. Praise be to Allah. Salute to that brother and all his success. He probably had 20 million followers on TikTok and whatnot at this point. You know, brother's been on TV and whatnot. The point of why I'm even bringing up, brother, is we have to, or it is intelligent to, elevate your palate to more refined tastes in this food category. When I grew up, we was drinking those little quarter waters, those little hugs, whatever. We was eating fruit by the foot. You know, blow pops, kind of things like that. So we like cherry's not a flavor, or cherry's not a fruit, it's a flavor. But there's no such thing as blue raspberry. But I grew up thinking there was such thing as blue raspberry. What does that taste like? What does that mean? Whatever the case may be. You know, Dave Chappelle says in a stand-up, he says, you know, the Sunny D commercial. He's like, you know, children are reaching in there for the Sunny D, whatever. And then he looked at him, he like, I want that purple stuff. Like, purple is the flavor of the Kool-Aid. You know, that's how we grow. That's how I grew up. So when you're growing up and you drinking black cherry Coke and you taste a cherry, you think that it's nasty. You're like, oh, man, I don't want to eat that. That's gross. or you eat a blueberry, you know, for the first time, you eat a fresh blueberry for the first time, oh man, that's gross, that doesn't taste good, you know? Because you're not used to that kind of taste. If you eat a lot of fast food, you know, you eat a lot of takeout, things of that nature. These things have a lot of, you know, chemicals, preservatives and whatnot, but they're highly seasoned. You know, I'm back up, I'm digressing, but I got to get this up because this is very important. When we were, before we became, you know, when we were still in slavery, we were given the worst types of food products. The scraps, the leftovers, really the trash, stuff that they throw away. You have to overly season and overly do all of these kind of things or with that kind of food because you're trying to cover up that you're eating pig intestines. You're trying to cover up the fact that you're eating like a pig's foot, collard greens and whatnot. You have to overcompensate for the quality of ingredient in what you're dealing with. But when you are, when you go to a really nice restaurant, you know, a Michelin star type restaurant, you will be able to taste a vegetable or a fruit or even a protein or like a meat item that has been properly raised and produced. So you can understand and taste the flavor. So when you get like an A5 Wagyu steak or whatever, they don't even want, no, I think it's crazy, but they don't even want to put salt on it because they want you to taste the flavor of the food product, the ingredient, rather than you want to taste a seasoning blend. So when we're growing up eating Doritos, you understand what I'm saying? And then we're trying to change our diet and get into some more, you know, healthy food options. The food doesn't taste as good. My nephew Yasir, he used to eat those little, Gerber packets or whatever, the fruit and vegetable joints, whatever the case may be. Then I remember when this little brother had his like first taste of like some table food, it's called that. Brother didn't want to even go back to the Gerber joints. You understand what I'm saying? Because the palate has been changed for the more, you know, highly seasoned, highly sugared item. So you get used to things like that. And so when you begin to try to change, it becomes difficult. It's like, man, this just doesn't taste good. This doesn't taste quality enough. So when we're talking about in a rap situation, especially today, we're used to 2 minute songs, two verses, just straight, you know, surface level lines. You understand what I'm saying? Something that you can just get right away. You don't got to think about it. It's just right in front of your face. How you big step with a size that men's on. Funny. Great. But it doesn't have the level of depth to it. There's another thing about Drake that's like a problem. The depth is not there in your artistic expression. And from the consumer perspective, we have been tuned or we have been fixed to accept low, let's just call it low level thought process. Surface level thought process. We don't want to think, which makes no sense. We're taught by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that the brain was the first thing developed. So not wanting to think makes no sense. But we want to get our food and we want to get our music in the quickest, most, you know, simplified way. There are grown adults that come to my job and order a chicken tender meal. I'm like, bro, you're a grown adult. How do you even feel comfortable ordering a chicken tender meal? You're 30 years old. Come on, bro. We have to develop our palate, refine our palate. So when if your palate is not refined and you're making a judgment, your judgment is not well informed. You're speaking on a subject in which you're not well informed. So your perspective is extra. Our perspectives are already limited. I'm not going to go down that road. But when you're not even availing yourself and trying to refine your palate, avail yourself to information and refine your palate, your perspective is even more limited than it really is in the macro or the grand scale or grand scheme of things. So when you're listening to a song like this, the YNW Melly stands out, which is cool, makes sense. the Parkinson's line stands out, makes sense. You understand what I'm saying? But the more nuanced things that Kendrick is saying, like I said, just the changing of the voice, the bow, 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 how he's saying that so emphatically. You understand what I'm saying? These things don't resonate with you as much because we are just not used to things like that. We have to increase our intelligence. Your perception is only as, it can only go as far from what you understand. If you don't understand more things or in-depth things about the subject, then you're not going to be able to perceive it in the right way. I'm going to finish going through the song real quick, then I'm going to wrap it up. So, a top dog, who the hell they think they're playing with? A social mom and her name, as soon as you jump off that plane. Crazy. I'm allergic to the lame-ish. Only you like being famous. Character attack. Character attack. Yachty can't give you no swag neither. I don't give a F about who you hang with. How he's saying this part. I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk. I hate the way that you dress. Surprised you wanted that feature request. You know that we got some stuff to address. You wanted a feature for me, bro? Anyway, let's move on. I even hate when you say the word nigga, but that's just me, I guess. It's one of the funniest lines in the world. And then he said, but that's just me, I guess. Some stuff just cringeworthy. He ain't even got to be deep, I guess. But in the mention this part, he's like, he ain't even got to be deep, I guess. But then Kendrick saying, like, the way he pronounced the I guess part, he ain't even got to be deep, I guess. He says it in this, like, comedic kind of satiristic way. We got to pay attention to this kind of stuff. Still love when you see success. Everything with me is blessed. Keep making me dance, wave my hand, and it won't be no threat. I'm warning you. I'm telling you. This is your lane. I like Drake with the melodies. I don't like Drake when he act tough. Because when you act tough, son, you're getting out of your lane. You feel me? He said, I know they call you the boy, but where's the man? Because I ain't even seen him yet. Then we get to the infamous sexy red line. I believe you don't like women in this real competition. You might pop, you know, the A word with him. Again, enunciation was crazy on that line. You know what I mean? But it says, that's real competition. Like, that is just pure comedy. It's hilarious. Then he said, let's speak on percentage. Show me your split top. Make sure I double back what you were signed to the person. I was signed to the person. I said it was signed to that person. People were talking about, oh, he's repeating what Pusha T said. To a degree, I mean, for the most part, I agree with you. Because Pusha T did say something very, very close to that. But he's saying you were signed to the person that signed to a person that said he was signed to that person. That's Bird. Like, he's playing like Bird, man. I'm like, he's talking about this person. So he's kind of in that little sentence drawing up a big, you know, arrow towards Birdman, who we already know is infamous for how he carry himself. So that's what I thought made it individual in that regard. Try Cease and Desist when I like that record. People are going to get mad at me because I'll keep talking about it. But how he says the Cease and Desist when I like that record. Or what? You ain't like that record? Bro. All of this stuff goes into, yo, and people saying that this song was 19 minutes. That is just crazy for this person to have this level of expression. It almost reminds me of when Robin Williams was doing he was the genie on Aladdin. He was doing all he would do, like he would turn to an elephant, he would turn to a bee, he turned like all different kind of things, and he would use that to translate his message, or like how Bumblebee will use like a pop reference to really express what's going on. Bumblebee from Transformers. So it's like, so he's like, try and see, does this one like that record? He said, oh, what, you ain't like that record? Then he's like, back to back, oh, I like that record. It's like a satire, like he's playing, but he's really rapping. And he's really serious. He says, back to back, I like that record. I'm going to get back to that for the record. The strategy of this brother was impeccable. This package of this, just this song right here, is so immaculate. And he said, why would I call it on trying to get dirt on people? Y'all think my life is rap? You know, since I got a son to raise, but I can see he don't know nothing about that. Right. The first time I heard this part, I was like, yo, this one I said, this was on Ether tier, this record. Because then again, he's like, no, nothing about that. He could have just said, he don't know nothing about that. But it's like, he does this like separate personality. Styles P said, got five personalities. I have a cipher with myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, you, it's like Kendrick is writing down his lyrics and he's like, his imagination is so peak. He's able to separate it. And this beat right here on this third part is literally insane. So he says, I got a son to raise. He don't know nothing about that. Again, character assassination. Waking him up. Come on, bro. Know nothing about that. Tell him to pray. Know nothing about that. Then giving him tools to walk through life like day by day. Know nothing about that. Teaching him morals, integrity, discipline. Listen, man, you don't know nothing about that. He's really talking to this man. He is really talking to this man. If you, Drake, you got to sit back and be like, all right, bro. Speaking the truth and consider what God's considering. Bruh. Don't let those, don't let this song go just over to your head or just pass you by. Because this brother is giving a lyrical hip hop exhibit. Ain't 20v1 is 1v20 if I gotta smack dudes that right with you. Pure comedy. Pure comedy. That was super hilarious. And my battling ghosts are AI. This whole part where he's putting the two names of these two Caucasians together was just super crazy. And then of course he's like, AI? Again, the enunciation thing is just, it's just crazy, bro. I wish I could have been in the studio when he was recording this joint. And my sixth sense telling me to off him. Super crazy. Tell him run to America. He said, yeah, tell him run to America and imitate heritage. They can't imitate this violence. This is super, super crazy. What I learned, that people don't like the West Coast, I'm fine with it. I'll push the line with it. Pick a dude up one at a time with it. Then he gets into the Crody part. Again, he's laughing. I'm joking. But I'm dead serious. Like, I'm jokingly being very serious with you. It's really crazy to even put it like that. It can go deep into family, Crody. Talk about me and my family, Crody. Someone gonna bleed in your family, Crody. When I said this before, I never knew Crody was Toronto slang until I got on TikTok. I never heard Drake say Crody before. How? I be a new how king eating fried rice with a dip sauce and a blame me, Crody. Tell me you're cheesing, fam. It's like, bro. I mean, the last part that he says, I wave one finger and thump y'all. Like, and then he does like, it's so intentional, but it's so visual. This song was really enough. And then at the end, he says, if you take it there, I'm taking it further. Meaning, I'm getting ready to drag this. If you go here, I'm going to drag it. You're going to be sick by the time I get done. Then he says, that's something you don't want to do. I'm warning you. I'm really giving you a warning. And in this song, I gave you all different type of structure, all different type of patterns, all different type of, you know, comedy, the whole shebang. So if you want to rap, I'm already really showing you that you're not even really close to me in the rapping part. But if you got to resort to slinging mud, I'm going to drag it. And see, when he said, I can't even predict your angle, what I felt Drake's next mistake was, he seen what led to victory for Pusha T. And against him. And he sat back and he was probably like, all right, this is what the people want. They want me to sling mud and spill tea and do all those kind of things like that. That's my path to victory. But Kendrick is saying, bruh, you don't want to go down that road with me. You better off spinning again on him. You think about pushing me. He's Terrence Thornton. I'm Terrence Crawford. Yeah, I'm whipping feet. I'm getting you out of here if you play with me. Keep it rap. Drake got out of his lane, but this song Euphoria is really insane. I'm gonna cut the episode here. It's gonna be a part two at least, and hopefully it don't go over to a part three, because I really just want to get to the cultural element and what we're talking about in this hip hop battle. But I really had to stop and focus on Kendrick's creativity. Thank you for anybody that's made it this far. I definitely will. The part two is gonna be coming very soon. I appreciate it. This is another episode of Tech Building Podcast. When the devil tries to keep you down, you always show up with the strategy. Peace.